Time now to catch up with Jeff from Acela Wines. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning to all your listeners.
And what's happening in the wonderful world of wine, mate?
Well, it's a beautiful day here at the vineyard. Weatherman has been predicting a fairly wet end of the weekend, Peter. So we'll...
Yeah, I'll have to get my flippers on.
But at the moment, it's absolutely gorgeous and sunny here, so... he's motivating us probably to do a little bit of gardening. We usually do it Friday before the weekend, but we might have to start a little early this week, Peter.
Yeah, otherwise you might be swept down to the river, mate, and you don't want that.
Well, he's had a bit of trouble making up his mind exactly what's going to happen, and I didn't look at it this morning. I'm going to now have a look for our area to see. He was predicting one day as much as 40 to 80 mil and 20 to 40 on each side. But now he's gone a bit less, Peter. He's saying 5 to 10, 5 to 10, 10 to 20, 10 to 20, 10 to 20, 5 to 10. So you would figure over those 6 days, somewhere in there, there's going to be rain.
Well, we hope so. And I mean, you sound like you're putting bets on the football match.
Just about. I think the weatherman's putting bets. He says, well, I'm not sure it's going to rain one of those days. And, you know, and if I say it's going to rain over 6 days, you know, I'm bound to be right somewhere.
Maybe we should give him a sponge full of water.
Yeah, I think we go back to Granny's. It was a cricket Granny had in the matchbox, wasn't it, in the Beverly Hillbillies?
Oh, I think so, yes.
Yeah, she used to keep a cricket in there. I don't know if you ever saw the episode where she got into a fight with the local weatherman from the local TV station.
No, I haven't seen that one, but it was a great series.
Yeah, it was. And in the end, of course, he ended up being totally embarrassed, and he challenged her to, you know, a weather prediction. And of course, Granny got it completely right. He got it completely wrong.
Oh, bong. Never mind.
So anyway, that's you know, that's an awful lot of rain, Peter, that's been predicted. So don't know. We'll see.
Well, they're saying Queensland might cop a lot of rain. Now, I remember last time this happened, we went from one extreme to the other with no water and too much water. And that, of course, the rain came down through northern New South Wales, made a complete mess everywhere.
Well, it did, especially after the bushfires, because, you know, even our dam water now, although it's very good for the vines, because it's got a little, you know, sort of live stuff in it and some carbon, but it smells, Peter, you know, like the water you put out, because the last heavy rain we had, of course, washed down from the mountains and brought some of the residuals of the fire, a bit of burn back that they'd done up there, so... Yeah, and it doesn't smell all that pleasant.
No,
the water. Fortunately, we don't use it in the house. Well, we do in the one toilet flush. But you know, but when I'm out there watering the grass loves it. God, it's growing like mad. But the rest of us think you know, we've had smells that are more pleasant, Peter.
Yes, there used to be what was that product? I can't remember that you could buy and you put it in the loo. Yeah, I can't remember.
Mm.
It was very good for that sort of problem.
Yeah, well, it's only in the one, and I noticed that it's improved dramatically. So it's obviously settled to the bottom of the dam.
Which is it's a good spot for it, actually.
Yeah, it is. You know what? If with all the duck manure and everything there, it's just too bad that somehow we can't get it completely, you know, mixed and out into the irrigation system, but. I can't put a sludge pump in there because, you know, the drip irrigation, the holes are so fine, Peter.
Yeah.
That it just won't go through. So it's a very, very difficult type, you know, thing to do. So anyway, so that's what's happening, Peter. We're waiting for, although we do have a bunch of journalists coming on Friday. Just not sure whether we have to issue flippers and goggles, but they're coming in Friday afternoon they're doing, it's what they call a famille here in Australia, I guess. They're visiting a few vineyards and then they're going to write in their various magazines and blogs about the local area here in the Brook-Fordwich region.
Well, that'd be good, because, I mean, there's so many of them at the moment that are actually in panic stage, and some that have, you know, really thrown the towel in, which is sad.
Well, it is. It's been a terrible situation everywhere. And, you know, the government's finally reacting to do something about it, but, you know, too little, too late. You know,
it's,
it goes back to, as we said many, many times, we're an urbanized country, and people in the city, as long as there's something on the shelf at a reasonable price when they go to the supermarket, they give very little thought to the rest of the country that's trying to produce that food and produce.
Yeah, well, the thing I noticed too, and there are some people, God love them, you know, if they want something, they buy it regardless. And I said, no, don't do that, for the simple reason that you're forcing the price up. And there are people like us that are on, you know, limited incomes. And we've got to watch what we buy, you know. I mean, it's getting very desperate.
Yes, and I think maybe there's a little bit of recognition. There was an article the other day, I don't know if we discussed it last week, they're talking about 2 degrees centigrade is going to reduce wine production in the world by 35%.
Heavens!
It was in the paper the other day because a lot of species, and you know, we're facing that here a little bit. I mean, the average temperature in Australia is going up dramatically. We've had 47, as high as 47 again this year, and twice in the last 5 years we've had 48.
So you can have your wine with toast.
Yeah, well, it's
and the toast is not
wine.
There, it's in the wine.
I think it's toasted wine, Peter. The vines, you know, they really struggle when it gets hot like that. So,
sure.
Anyway, some interesting things today, Peter. You know, we were talking about the pollution and people living on busy roads, and children as young as one get seriously affected, and it shows up in their young childhood and later teen years, the effect of the pollution on their health.
That's
another
right.
study just came out, Peter, and what they've done is they've taken monkeys this time. If rats are 98% human, monkeys have got to be closer. So we're talking virtually a study that's similar to doing a study on humans. And they found, they recreated like city pollution, and they found that after 2 hours, they could measure, like visibly measure, the first steps of cardiovascular disease. And if they gave them 2 hours and then stopped it, those first steps of cardiovascular disease took 24 hours to go away.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is came out of University of Athens in Greece, but so we're talking about a direct and immediate measurable effect of breathing pollution.
And smoke and all those things.
Exactly, and we're talking about city dwellers now, and that was the focus of the show last week. We talked about the two ones where the general the effect on health of pollution of diesel or city air pollution, but specifically we talked about the effect on children as young as 1 year old and the performance effect that it has in their childhood and in their teenage years as they grow up. So it's not good, Peter. You know, I don't know what you do about it. You live in a city. We can't all live in the country, I guess. Well, we could, I guess. But, it really is something that we, you know, if we've got young families and that, we have to deal with.
And we have to deal with it pretty quickly.
Exactly. Deregionalization, or regionalization, I guess, is the correct term in Australia, has never succeeded. Even with government grants and all sorts of aids and that, people just will not move out of the city. But look, there's so much information now, Peter, that what you're doing to your family and your children, that it's a wonder that, you know, we're not decentralizing a lot more than we are.
I'll tell you one thing. I love where you're located. It's absolutely beautiful. The air's fresh. You got everything you want within a reasonable distance if you drive.
It's true, Peter, but I'm damned because I lived in cities for, you know, 50 years or 40 years.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're showing your age there.
Yeah, I don't know how long it takes to, you know, to get rid of all the effects. But I think we, if you recall, I think we did a show not too long ago, is the people that live in city. I believe it was 80 billion particulates of pollution in everybody's body. 80 billion, I think, then it was, Peter. And there's particulate, mostly from diesel engines and from other types of pollution, but in every cell in your body, your bone cell, blood cells, you know, fat cells, everywhere. I mean, it's got to be everywhere for you to be carrying around 80 billion particles of pollution.
Gene, I wonder sometimes you think, what am I going to have for dinner? And, you know, you sort of struggle with that because you think, well, if I eat that, nah. What about this one? Nah. And eventually you finish up with a cup of coffee while you're thinking about it.
Yeah, well, it could be good for you too, as we did in that show. But anyway, I do have one or two other things. One I thought that was particularly interesting because I've had this discussion with a friend of mine before. Yeah. I actually had the facts, and they're talking about this keto diet. They've done a study with mice. Actually, and mice, of course, and rats are almost human, or as we like to say, a few humans are almost rats.
They are in my bus.
So, a ketogenic diet, you know, the strict one, they provide 99% of calories from fat and only 1% from carbohydrates. And they say produces health benefits in the short term, but after about a week, the negative effects start, Peter. And this comes out of Yale University, so a bunch of boffins here produce this, Peter. And the keto diet tricks the body into burning fat. I'll just jump here. When the body's glucose level is reduced due to the diet's low carbohydrate content, the body acts as if it's in a starvation state, although it is not. It begins to burn fat instead of carbohydrates. And this process in turn yields chemicals called ketone bodies as an alternative source of fuel. When the body burns ketone bodies, tissue protective gamma delta T's expand throughout the body. But when the body is in this not starving mode, fat storage is also happening simultaneously with fat breakdown, the researchers found. And they lose the protective gamma delta T cells in the fat. And they said, you know, ultimately, very bad for your health. We're talking about all types of potential medical problems here. So I've had this discussion before about the keto diet with friend of mine, and I think we actually did discuss it about 6 months ago. At about the time I discussed it with my friend, we did have an article on that. But it's not a healthy way. And look, moderation in everything. You cannot deprive your body of fat. You know, just or just no, sorry, deprive your body of carbohydrates. Which is what this diet does. So they're just pointing out that the measurable health issues within 1 week of starting the diet, Peter.
Well, I think, you know, you would understand, as I do, we've got quite enough of issues at the moment. We don't really need any more.
I would say, you know, like, You do a diet to improve your health, Peter.
Yeah, you don't do it to wreck yourself.
No, I think the best exercise that for human health that a person can do is the exercise of pushing your chair back from the dinner table, Peter.
Or keep your mouth out of the fridge.
Hey, don't open the fridge door. Those are two.
But you know what? One family I know, and this is going back a number of years, they actually put a lock on the fridge. To stop the kids and everybody eating the food out of there?
Yeah. Well, I know that, like, my mother, of course, we were And I'm talking a long, long time ago, you know, hard, my parents were hard working people. But money was not plentiful. I mean, we grew a lot of our own vegetables and things in the town that we grew up in, and that because the money had to go the distance with a bunch of kids. And my father used to get a bit annoyed if we got in the garden and ate some of his stuff outside of dinner hours.
I just imagine you doing that.
Like snacks, we always had healthy snacks, but they were always guided by my mother because, you know, you could not get in there and interfere with what she was going to have for dinner or, you know, part of her meal plan. It takes planning, you know, to make the food go and do it. So I understand that totally. Whereas on the other hand, in the United States now, a lot of people don't cook anymore, Peter. We've talked about this before. We have all sorts of friends in North America that give up cooking when their children leave home. And they're often just in their 50s or early 50s. And they eat out. Often they'll eat, if they're retired, they'll go and they'll have a big lunch and then not have to worry about dinner or anything.
Yeah, well, that's no good doing that.
No, well, this study, this came out of the Tufts University Health Sciences campus, and they found that restaurant quality meals are worsening. The 14-year trend in the United States show they're worsening. Typical adult gets one of every five calories from a restaurant in the United States. But eating out is a recipe for poor nutritional quality. And they found that you want to do your health in, Peter, you'll be a regular restaurant eater.
Well, you know, we often go to shopping centres, as I guess you guys do as well. And you think, oh, look, I won't worry about it. I'll have something to eat. And you've really got to think about what you're going to have because some of the stuff on offer is bloody awful.
I know. And it's actually, if you've got allergies and stuff like I have, it never, ever sits well with me, Peter. When I eat out, you know, unless I have a salad or something, you know, that's clear and clean and that, it just, I don't know, it just, my body, I think, has got a psychological block when it comes to eating in restaurants, unfortunately. It's not that I don't enjoy the food, but my body doesn't react to it as well as it does, you know, when you prepare something and eat it at home. So what this article is saying, I empathize with a lot of,
yes.
I got right, yeah, with a lot of the small restaurants that are cooking their own meals and that, and they do a wonderful job. These we're talking here, I think, in the United States about the Red Robin change and there's Maria Callender and there's chains with thousands of restaurants across. And they're actually eating restaurants catering to this. You know, Americans eat 20%, 21% of their food input comes from restaurants. And that's these restaurants are medium priced. They're there to cater to this change in lifestyle.
Sure.
And I think that's where they're focusing, you know, not on the mum and dad, where mum's doing the cooking and that, and she's doing well.
Do you know what? I've got a really accolades for Mick at the Newcastle Leagues Club. He turned out some potato bake the other day, and it had bacon, and it had lots of cheese, and it had garlic, and it was the most delicious one I've had in ages.
Yeah, and I'd probably suffer for 3 days, Peter, because I can't take garlic. That's something that's come in the last 20 years. And spices, they don't do me. About the only spice that I can eat and not suffer from are capers. And I do eat quite a bit of capers because I like salmon, you know, and I like capers with the salmon. So, but most of the spices I don't do anymore. And that's one of the reasons I don't eat a lot out at restaurants as well.
And who's the removalist in the background?
Oh, that's Bob. Bob, you're smashing stuff that's coming through to the radio here. We should have shut the door.
It doesn't matter. Something.
Yeah, she's preparing something in the work center in there, Peter.
Right, and, lovely. Mate, we've got to get some people to, of course, adore and have delivered some beautiful organic wine.
Sorry, I just had to leave. The worker in there didn't get the message, Peter. So,
well, you put the baseball bat away now. Oh, that's terrible. Mate, I was just going to say, we need to get some beautiful organic wine out to people.
We do, Peter. And acellowines.com.au or call us here at the Vineyard, 657-452-75.
And they can email too, I believe.
They can at info@acellowines.com. And they can get in touch with us anytime. We're happy to see them or come visit as well, Peter.
Well, you'd like them to come over this weekend, in fact, any weekend.
Yes, any weekend. Just look at the weather, man. I mean, we can always do it inside. We do have some areas out of the rain that's coming. And in fact, it might be a good idea. You can't do anything else, Peter. Come out and have a nice taste of wine. Watch the waterfall.
I think so. Mate, lovely to catch up with you yet again.
Yeah, thanks, Peter, and we'll catch up with you next week. And let's no more keto diet, Peter. So.
No, I'm not going to do that, no. No, it'll be good, Jeff. Looking forward to it.
Okay, mate. Bye-bye.
Thank you, mate. Jeff from Acella Wines. So it's acellawines.com.au. And like we said, get involved. It's lovely. Do it now.